that morning when this life is o'er, I'll fly away to a home on God's celestial shore. I'll fly away. I'll fly away, oh glory, I'll fly away. When I die, hallelujah, by and by, I'll fly.
Welcome to the radio program Genesis and the Gates of Hell. Everyone knows the book of Genesis, even if they haven't studied it, but the gates of hell is a less known phrase that is in the New Testament. It is the phrase used by Christ when he was with the disciples at Caesarea Philippi near the Sea of Galilee. Christ was telling his disciples that the church will go on the offensive against Satan, and Satan will not prevail, but the church will prevail. That is what this radio program is about. Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. Is that true? For a Christian, it is truth. In John chapter 1, it says, all things were made by him, and without him was not anything made that was made. In him was life, and the life was the light of men, and the light shineth in darkness, and the darkness comprehended it not. When your children come home from school or college with the notion that the stories in Genesis are untrue because science says it is not true, how do you respond? When you ask, what are you talking about? They will generally respond, science says so. Your response should be that science has changed, but the Bible has not. You can no longer reject the stories of Genesis because science disproves it, because recent scientific discoveries reaffirm the stories in Genesis. All right, here we are in chapter 20 of Genesis, our last chapter. Obviously, it was chapter 19, but we did three or four. I can't remember how many on 19. And the last portion was Lot and his daughters. We'll not get into all that, but there sure was a lot in chapter 19. Not so much in chapter 20. We've only got, 18 verses. I'm Marshall Bandy, and Greg Grayson's here. How are you, Greg?
You know, I am above ground. I'm doing pretty good. How you been doing?
Oh, better than I deserve. And in studying this chapter 20, there are a couple of names that are new to us. One is Abimelech, and another is the Negev. And let's see. I think that's pretty much it as far as the other than, of course, Abram and Sarah, it was still Sarah. So what's your overall thinking about what chapter 20 is trying to tell us?
I had two thoughts as I studied this chapter. Of course, it seems like it's almost a carbon copy of Abraham's interaction with the Pharaoh of Egypt, but there are some nuances and some differences I seem to recognize in here. But so the two thoughts that went through my mind was, God, why Abraham? Why Abram? Why did you pick this man? Because if you look at him and what we've studied so far, he puts his wife in severe peril just to save his own skin here with King Abimelech. And he did the same thing with the king of Pharaoh, or the Pharaoh of Egypt. And, you know, I look at that and I say, here he does this thing, and
he got away with it once.
Oh, he not only got away with it, but he got away with wealth and riches. And here Abimelech gives him 1,000 shekels of silver and says, you know, there's my kingdom, live where you want. But I'm saying to myself, this was a sinful act he did. This wasn't just wasn't just him not having faith in God, which it certainly was that. He didn't believe God could protect him. But he was deceitful to the king, and he was deceitful and he lied with intent, and he did it out of fear for his life. And In addition to that, he was so pitiful that he was willing and even asked his wife to go and be put in danger herself so that he might live.
Let's read the first few verses of this to lay the foundation of what's going on. Now, of course, we were talking about Lot and the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah and in 19. So it really, Abram wasn't involved in that chapter to amount to anything other than he was not there. Lot was his brother or nephew. So here we are, picking up with Abraham again. His name is now Abraham. It is not Abram. Now, Abraham moved from there into the region of the Negev. So where had Abraham been prior to moving to the region of Negev? It was in this area, not at Sodom and Gomorrah, but it was near there.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't very far away. But after those cities were destroyed, I guess there's no explanation as to why he decided to leave there. I don't remember any explanation. It says, now Abram moved on from there into the region of the Negev.
Well, you know, he was nomadic, and he had herds and flocks, and so they did have to move to new pastures and new areas to graze them. But this area that dwelt between Kadesh and Shur, which was Gerar, Gerar was a very prosperous city, and it was strategically located right along a major trade route between Egypt and Canaan. So there was probably a lot of good reasons why he would want to situate himself in that area.
And Negev also means to the south.
Mm.
And okay. Negev, so they called it Negev, and you have to wonder, well, why is it called Negev? If you lived in Negev, would you call yourself the south? Mm. Well, obviously it is south from this prosperous area.
All right. And what would a herd of 1,000 horses, how would that make you wealthy? Well, you sold them. You traded them. You were in the business of husbandry. That was one of his
traits. And the horses would breed, and there would be fillies and colts. Mm-hmm. As a result of that, they would graze, and so you would have more wealth, mm-hmm, by virtue of increasing the size of the flock or the size of the herd. The flock being the sheep or the goats, and then the mm-hmm herds being the herds of horses. And they lived in between Kadesh and Shur. For a while he stayed in Gerar, and there Abraham said of his wife Sarah, "She is my sister." Then Abimelech, king of Gerar, sent for Sarah and took her. But God came to Abimelech in a dream one night and said to him, "You are as good as dead because of the woman you have taken. She is a married woman." I'm going to take issue with you on a couple of things. Number one, I don't think Abraham lied. Abraham said that this is my sister, and it was his sister. She also happened to be his wife. She said, "He is my brother." Well, he was also her brother. So it is a question of interpretation as to whether or not there was an actual lie. Was there some, as the law says, some misrepresentation? Was that said with the intent of misrepresenting something to Abimelech? Maybe, but I don't think it rises to the level of a lie. And also, did somehow the Lord work him into this, recommend that he do this? Now it says, now Abimelech had not gone near her, so he said, "Lord, Will you destroy an innocent nation? Did he not say to me, she is my sister? And did she also say, he is my brother? I have done this with a clear conscience and clean hands. Now, here we are with someone who is Abimelech. He's a pagan. And he's talking about words like clear conscience. And what has happened to him? Something happened to Abimelech when Sarah was in his household.
Yeah, some of the commentaries I studied said that Abimelech went and sought out Moses, or Moses, what I've got him on my brain, sought out Abraham because Abraham was really a wealthy man, and King Abimelech wanted to meet Abraham, and by taking his sister would form an alliance with Abraham.
I think that's a very good point. That's how these people, that's why in the ancient world there were so many marriages. They may not have actually entered into a conjugal relationship.
Well,
sometimes they call them their wives.
Yeah.
Now, and then you're thinking, well,
yeah, she was pretty. You know, even at that age, she probably was still pretty.
You're saying at the age of 60 or 70.
Mm, mm. Yeah.
Okay.
And I think he would have went into her had he had the opportunity. One of the important things here we see is God did not let that happen. God prevented Abimelech from doing that. Whether Abimelech took her in his innocency, thinking that, okay, she's his sister, God prevented him from doing that. And why? Because it's simple. God's purpose is not going to be destroyed by our weaknesses. His grace and his blessings, once promised, remain. Regardless of our disobedience, he did not allow the divine line to be placed in jeopardy, which was coming from Sarah. And so he couldn't let Abimelech go in and violate her. But more importantly, you had a code. It was a Babylonian law of Mesopotamia called the Code of Hammurabi.
Right.
And in the Code of Hammurabi, adultery was a very serious offense, punishable by death.
Yeah, there wasn't any of this, you know, getting a divorce and you know, you lose your bedroom furniture and,
right.
And your car.
So
you wind up in the grave.
One the code, I think, by death you were drowned, thrown in water, and Abraham knew this. And in he still put hit the king.
Now see, this is something that we got to remember. We got to read the Bible in the era in which the story appears.
Right.
You can't read it in terms of the 20th century.
No. No.
It says in verse 8, early the next morning, Abimelech summoned all his officials, and when he told them all that had happened, they were very much afraid.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what does very much afraid tell you? Now, why would they be afraid? Here's the king. This is the king. Why should they be afraid?
Because he was.
Why was he afraid?
Well, we know one thing.
He was the king. Why would he be afraid? He's not at no reason to be afraid of Abraham. He can't be afraid of Sarah.
In verse 18, it says, for the Lord had completely closed all the wombs of the house of Abimelech because of Sarah, Abraham's wife. That'd make me kind of fearful.
Well, it would. Do they know that that's why it was? Or was there fear of God put in Abimelech?
Absolutely.
And that fear of God by virtue of the dream that the Lord gave him.
Mm-hmm.
That night.
Yeah, absolutely, without a doubt.
He became afraid. Is it the psalmist or is it in Isaiah? With the fear of God comes understanding.
Yeah, yeah.
Fear of the Lord.
Is the beginning of all wisdom.
It's the beginning of all wisdom.
Correct. Yeah.
So if you had had a dream like that,
mm-hmm.
and when you woke up, you looked into it a little bit and you said, that's true. Yeah, I think I'd be a little afraid.
Yep. And so let's even take it a step further. So Abimelech says, what have you done to me? What have you done, this thing you've done to me? And Abraham replies, because I thought surely the fear of God is not in this place, and they will slay me for my wife's sake. So we see here that the king displays great fear of God, and Abraham displays great fear of man. And Abraham's supposed to be following God, and Abimelech's supposed to be a pagan.
How much of this do we have to step back and say this is the work of God?
All of it.
Because this whole nation were non-believers.
Mm-hmm.
After this happened, I don't think they were non-believers. They may have continued in their worship of the other pagan gods, but they know this at this point. They knew who God was. They knew who Abraham's God was.
Without a doubt, particularly when God said, you know, you ask Abraham to pray for you and healing will come. So Abraham had to pray for Abimelech. But, you know, so one of the issues I had with Abraham, and I do think it was a sin. I think he sinned. I think he was deceitful. And I think because of his sin, that consequences were visited on innocent people, such as the women whose wombs were shut. And they did nothing to deserve that. And I think the lesson here is that our sin has far more reach than just us suffering consequences. Our sin can cause consequences to be brought upon innocent people. Case in point, look at the sin of a pedophile. Now, he may be forgiven, and he may turn from his ways, and he may become a follower of Christ, but his sin can have long-lasting effects, traumatic effects, on a young, innocent child. So the consequences of our sin can affect those around us that don't deserve to have to share in the consequences of our actions, but it does happen. And so I don't look favorably upon Abraham here. He couldn't wait on the Lord and took Hagar. He tried to do it his own way. He didn't display any faith in God to protect him with the Pharaoh, nor with Abimelech. And yet God comes to him and says, Abram, get up, leave everything behind, your land, your inheritance, everything, and go somewhere where I'll tell you. And he didn't even know where he was going, and he left and did it. It is such a disparity there. I wonder, why did God choose Abraham? And I think, after I pondered on that, I think he did it because Abraham was a lot like we are, a lot like David. The scripture doesn't wax over it. It doesn't provide a clean version. It shows us a man who had absolutely ton of frailties. And one part, he fears Abimelech, and in another, he gets 300 men and chases down a group of kings and defeats them at night with his army, with 300 men. He displays tremendous courage at points, and then he acts like a milquetoast of a man at other times. And I found in Corinthians, 1 Corinthians 28, and base things of the world and things which are despised, but God hath chosen the foolish things of the world to confound the wise, and God hath chosen the weak things of the world to confound the things which are mighty, and the base things of the world and the things which are despised hath God chosen, yea, and things which are not, to bring to nothing things that are. I think he does it because it glorifies him. Abraham could not say, look at me. And that verse in Corinthians goes on to say that no flesh should glory in his presence. None of us have any glory that we can claim. And so Abraham, I think, was a man of great weakness.
Well, Abimelech asked Abram. He just came out and asked him, what was your reason for doing this?
Yeah.
And Abraham answers him. We assume that this is a truthful response. He says, I said to myself, there is surely no fear of God in this place, and they will kill me because of my wife. Besides, she really is my sister, the daughter of my father, though not of my mother, and she became my wife. Now, this is an interesting phrase coming up. And when God had me wander from my father's household, I said to her, this is how you can show your love for me. Everywhere we go, say to me, he is my brother.
Yeah.
In other words, this is not the first time he's done it.
No.
We know he did it with the Pharaoh. We know he did it this time. But this is an indication that he has done this the whole time since he left Ur.
From the outset, yeah.
From the very beginning.
Yep.
Then Abimelech gave him sheep and cattle, and after they had developed a fear of the Lord, they see him as a prophet.
Yeah.
In the dream.
I don't think so. I mean, yeah, they saw him as a prophet in the fact that he prayed for Abimelech and his wife and his maidservants, and they bore children. So Abraham, there in 17, he prayed. And God told Abimelech, you ask Abraham to pray for you.
I thought there was a phrase in here where the Lord told Abimelech that Abraham was a prophet.
I think he did. I think he did. In this section, in 7. Now therefore restore the man his wife, for he is a prophet, and he shall pray for thee, and thou shalt live, and if thou restore her not, know that thou shalt surely die. So, yeah, I would imagine that struck fear in his heart.
So he, Abimelech, has been told by God that Abraham is a prophet.
And yet, I woke up saying, Abraham, if Abraham did this sin, where's the consequence? Well, the consequence comes out because Abimelech gathers together everybody in his entire household, which was a ton of people.
And we don't know if it included more people than just his household.
He called Abraham and said unto him, what hast thou done unto us, and what have I offended thee? And thou hast brought on me and my kingdom a great sin. Thou hast done deeds unto me that ought not be done. And Abimelech rose early and called all his servants and told all these things in their ears. And so, yes, I'm sure they were all afraid. But he then pulls Abraham out in front of all of them and dresses him down, absolutely humiliates him, actually goes as far as lecturing him on morality. You shouldn't do this kind of stuff. What have you done? Do you see what position you've placed me in? I could have become an adulterer, Abraham. You have caused sin, consequences to close every womb of the women in my entire kingdom. You've done this.
And Abimelech said, my land is before you. Live wherever you like. And then he turns to Sarah.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, I am giving your brother.
Yeah.
That's not kinda, your husband.
That's sarcastic, isn't it?
I'm not giving. Yes. I'm giving your brother.
Your brother.
A thousand shekels of silver. This is to cover the offense against you before all who are with you. Mm-hmm. You are completely vindicated.
Right.
In other words, not only did I make a mistake, but I am paying you for the mistake that I made.
Yeah. Even though it wasn't my fault.
Even though it wasn't my fault.
And now, can you imagine what all the manservants and women servants, maidservants, and all the people that certainly the herdsmen that were employed by Abraham. Can you imagine what they said? They said, did you hear what he did? No, what? He did it again. Did what? He told the king that his wife was his sister because he was afraid. I mean, how humiliating. Abraham suffers serious damage to his honor and his reputation there. His witness is damaged. He's dressed down by a king. And then he
But he's dressed down by a king who now believes in God.
Well, certainly honors God.
That's right.
And then he takes this public chastisement, and then he has to pray for the king and his wife and his maidservants for healing. And all of this because he was deceitful and feared man and didn't want to die.
And he prayed for them so they could have children again, so the wombs were opened.
And what do you think that his actions did for his witness as a man of God and as a prophet? I think this was a sinful, deceitful act he did out of his own fleshly fear.
I'm still thinking. I'm still thinking that he leaves the land of Ur, goes out into the hinterland, into the rest of the world, and he knows what the rest of the world thinks of adultery. He knows the attractiveness of his wife. He knows that he is in peril because of her, because she would be someone, if he were out of the way, whoever took him out of the way would take her. And she would be their possession.
And God had promised him a child through Sarah, and he was going to make him the father of a great nation, and he's going to let a king just take her, give her away because he's fearful for his own life?
And the obvious thing is to say, well, Abraham didn't trust the Lord enough. He should have trusted the Lord. Well, you know what I think? I think if he had taken... Not that he didn't trust the Lord. If he had taken the attitude of nonchalant, well, I'm not going to do any thinking on my own. I'm just going to walk on down the king's highway. And as I'm going through these trade routes, the protection of myself and my wife is the Lord. And I'm not going to do anything at all to protect the two of us. He saw this scheme as a method of protecting them as husband and wife.
But
we're in a culture where everybody that hears this discussion is saying, how could a man do that to his wife? But they weren't living in the kind of culture that we're in right now.
But how could he become the father of a great nation if Abimelech had kept his wife for himself? Abraham put in jeopardy the divine line. He twice, because God had already made a covenant with him and said, I'm going to make a great nation out of you. Matter of fact, he says...
Well, he's not going to make a great nation out of him if he's dead.
Nor if Sarah's dead.
Nor if Sarah's dead. So here is the scheme that keeps them both alive.
Well, I don't think his scheme did it. I think God did it. Well, he used his scheme, maybe, but
And maybe it's a scheme that he came up with and the Lord let him get away with it.
I think it's clear that God said that he would make Abraham a blessing to all the families of the earth.
And he did.
And yet here in a kingdom of women's wombs were shut closed.
Yeah.
Births stopped.
I guess my point here is I'm not as sure as you are. We know what happened. There's no disagreement between the two of us as to what the facts are.
Yeah, absolutely not. No.
The question is, how much of this was the action of Abraham? How much of it was the action of the culture? How much of it was the plan of God and the sovereignty of God.
I think it was always the sovereignty of God. He chose the weak and the frail, and
He knew in advance what Abraham was capable of, what Sarah was capable of, and on that note, I guess with the sovereignty of God, we're going to end our session on chapter 20 of Genesis. And this session of Genesis and the Gates of Hell, and we'll catch you next week.
Do good work, make good choices.
We are not mighty by the world's measure, nor wise, nor of noble standing. And yet God has called us out as a royal priesthood, that we should show forth His truth and declare His glory. Though our program rejoices in seeing the handiwork of God's creation, and we stand amazed at His order and intelligent design, we do not rest our message there, nor do we seek to persuade or convince you by the wisdom and science of this age. For we are not here to prove God by secular means, nor add to the sufficiency of Christ crucified, which is the power of God unto salvation to all who believe. Until our next broadcast, may the Lord bless thee and keep thee. The Lord make His face shine upon thee and be gracious unto thee. The Lord lift up His countenance upon thee and give thee peace.
Some glad morning when this life is o'er, I'll fly away to a home on God's celestial shore.